should do our own. Well, we're putting the finishing touches on a quarter here in which we talked about how to keep fear from scaring us to death. And I must admit that I think I've experienced some pretty radical and permanent character changes as a result of this study here and the result of some of the things going on with me in life, and it's teaching me how to trust God. And one thing I know is that the benefit I gain from it and the benefit you gain from it is not just for me and it's not just for you. It's for those who follow behind us. It's for the people who look at us and the people who are looking to us for an example on how to live. Listen to this about Jesus. Here is my servant whom I uphold. This is Isaiah 42. Here is my servant whom I uphold, my chosen one in whom I delight. I will put my spirit on him and he will bring justice to the nations. He will not shout or cry out or raise his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break and a smoldering wick he will not snuff out. I think a reed was something like this. This is a piece of river cane. And a reed you can use, if you're careful with it, as a walking stick and go up and down hills or walk around with it. And it's got some flexibility to it. I'm not too sure he was talking about cane, but I think he was talking about something similar to this when he said a bruised reed he won't break. And so as long as the integrity of this piece of stick is pretty well maintained, it's got some strength to it, right? It's got some resiliency and some strength. But if I put that thing down and somebody comes along and stomps on it like that or similar to that, and then you try to use that thing as a walking stick, what'll happen is it'll break down on you. That's called a bruised reed. And the smoldering wick that he's talking about, I think, has to do with a lamp that burns with oil. And the lamp has a wick in it, and when the oil gets low, the wick starts sputtering and smoking and is an irritant to those around it. And the picture that Isaiah draws of Jesus is that he won't break a bruised reed and he won't snuff out a smoldering wick. This piece of stick right here was, until a few minutes ago, a fairly decent excuse for a fishing pole. Or it was also fairly good for a walking stick. But right now, it's not worth very much, and I'm liable to throw it away when I get done with this class. Well, that's what you do with bruised reeds, unless you're Jesus. And then you don't break them. Several years ago, I came to the startling conclusion that he wasn't even talking about walking sticks and candle wicks. He was talking about people and how Jesus treats people. I'd like to say something about mental illness for a minute. That's kind of what I do for a living is help people who have compromised brains and compromised thinking. And I'm not the world's expert on it by any means. I sure have thought about it a lot and studied up on it a lot and tried to figure out what it is. And I've concluded that we don't know what it is. There's a lot of factors and a lot of manifestations of mental illness. And most likely... most, if well, some of you for sure have are impacted by it to one degree or another. And we know how it manifests itself, and we know some things it responds to, but what it is exactly, I don't know. But we know that there's a chemical component to it, because if you take certain pharmaceuticals, it responds in a particular way. Sometimes good, if we hope good, and but sometimes not. So there's something going on in the brain. We know that there's an emotional component to it. And I'm convinced that there's a spiritual component to it. And there's an upbringing component to it. Because don't you know that it's possible when you're a little bitty person to do things, you learn how to do certain things in order to survive, and then when you get grown, it doesn't make sense anymore, but you keep doing them, and it looks kind of goofy to people. It's like if a snake bit me when I was 5 years old in the high grass, and I'm 30 years old now, and I still won't walk in the high grass, and my buddies want me to, they're going to think I'm weird if I don't. But it helped me, you know, it helped me stay alive back when I was little, or it nearly killed me by doing it. And so it made sense when I was little, but it doesn't make sense now that I'm big. And so there's an upbringing component to this thing we call mental illness. But there's a couple of manifestations of it that are revealing to me. And one of them is that if I'm sick and I got ulcers, what ulcers do is they attack or inflict harm on a particular part of my body. What is it, typically? Your stomach, usually. What if I have the gout? What's that do to me? It hurts. Or arthritis, where does that hit you? All over joints, typically. Now, what about heart disease? There's a pretty simple one. Well, nearly any disease that I can get, it will attack a certain organ of my body or organs of my body. Well, what about mental illness? What's that attack? Attacks my brain. Well, here's a problem for me. Because if I have heart disease, what I'll do is I'll think about it and I'll reach some conclusions. And I'll say, okay, what I need to do is I need to go to the doctor and he needs to tell me what to do. And I'll go to a personal trainer here and I'll start exercising right and I'll start eating right. And I go through a logical thinking process in order to arrive at a cure. Same way with any other disease that we have. But what if I have mental illness? Well, in that case, the thing that I typically use to fix my problems is the very thing that I can't trust to use because it's not working right. So my brain is compromised. Well, if my brain is compromised and I can't use my thinking to fix myself, what that means is I'm living with somebody I can't trust. You ever tried that? What if it's yourself? So, if I'm living with somebody I can't trust and it's me, then I stay in a world of hurt all the time. And that's partially why people with mental illness are said to also have concomitant with that a thing we call paranoia, which simply means scared. Well, I'm scared because I can't trust myself for my own thinking. Well, what heals that? What actually fixes that? There's a jillion theories out there, and I studied a good many of them. And, you know, there's some people who were made famous by studying the problems of humans and trying to figure out what that is. And you know, Freud and Adler and Maslow and all those guys. And they all are looking at the same thing and trying to figure out what this is. And we're trying to think, okay, if I've got this in my life, or if somebody else has it who's coming to me expecting me to have answers for it, what are the answers to it? And the truth is that it's murky. The answers are murky. It's hard to come up with 100% answers. But one thing I noticed that I'm going out on a limb a little bit because I have zero empirical evidence to support this, and I've never heard anybody really teach it. But here's what I believe, if I may tell you this. If a person comes to our center over there, we have a little horse farm over in Tomball where people come who have mental illness and they're looking for relief. Well, if a person comes over there and they're in an active state of upset, they many times are not able to put a sentence together in a way that makes sense to the average person. Or they might laugh at something that's not, doesn't seem funny, or they might not laugh at something that is funny, or they might not be able to match their socks or something like that. And so I can spend some time with a person like that and conclude pretty accurately that they have a compromised brain of some kind because the thinking isn't like an average person's thinking would be. But another thing that I noticed is that if I go up to them and I throw my arm around their shoulders and say, "Tommy, I am glad you're here. You're welcome here. You're in the right spot. I really think a lot of you, and I appreciate you being here." Well, most of the time, this person will smile at me. And their smile looks like an average person's smile. And I concluded that the smile might come somewhere from other than the brain. I might be wrong about that. I'm thinking this smile might be coming from his spirit. Well, of course, the brain has to be functioning in order to be able to smile. I know, I understand that. But I think I'm touching something other than just the cognitive process when I smile at him and wish him well and welcome him, because he smiles like an average person would smile back at me. I concluded that his brain might be compromised, but his spirit might be fairly okay. And his spirit will respond to certain things. So it gives me a lot of hope then, because I really don't know how to cure schizophrenia. And I don't know of anybody else who knows how to cure that part of it. But what I do know how to do is to relieve some of the suffering associated with it. And I can do that without having to be a doctor too, you know, because I can do that part of it. So if I am, so then what we're talking about are bruised reeds and smoldering wicks, hurt people. And so what's my job? My job is to not break them and to not snuff them out, but to touch them however way I can and heal them. Make smooth paths for your feet so that those following behind, the lame, might not be disabled. That's in Hebrews 11. So our study then about how to keep fear from scaring you to death is really appropriate, because it not only helps us, but it helps us to help those who are walking behind us. Now, what we know is that the clinically mentally ill condition is a minority. It's not the majority of people. And so we don't necessarily run into that condition every day of our lives. But here's the funny thing about it. We don't have to, because the whole world has this problem. How much can you trust your own thinking? When we first started our class, I talked about, I was sitting on the banks of the Kilimanjaro River in southern Tanzania, listening to hippopotami out in the river. And we were burning ebony wood, which struck me as strange. But ebony wood burns really good, and makes a nice campfire. And I was considering what my buddy Pete had told me about how lions hunt. And they'll find a herd of zebra out in the scrub somewhere, and the killer lions, the ones who are going to catch the zebra, sneak around downwind of the zebra to where the zebra can't smell them, and they get hidden in the rocks and bushes in an ambush. And then an old lioness will swing around upwind of the zebra and show herself. She typically won't roar or make a sound or anything, but she'll show herself. The zebra will see her. They'll think she's come to kill them, and they'll panic and run away from her. To where? To the lions who are waiting to kill them. So their fear, what they should have done, was run at that old lioness because she'd never catch them. But who knows? I mean, who's going to ever teach them? They've been doing it for millions of years or thousands of years. They haven't learned yet. Well, what they should have done was run toward what looked like danger. That way they were running away from the actual danger. But their fear scared them to death. And so it occurred to me to be aggravated at the zebra because they're so dumb. And then I thought, what I really need to do is quit worrying about zebra, because we got a whole world of people who are in a mad rush to do the same thing. Try to let our fears scare us to death. And it literally does that. So my job then is to be around people. After I learn the skills that we've talked about in this class, to be around the regular people, the ordinary people, the people who with whom I come in contact every day, and recognize that they're bruised reeds, and recognize that they're smoldering wicks, and it's my job not to crush them and not to snuff them out, but to heal them. You know what else it said about Jesus? He says, I will keep you and will make you to be a covenant for the people and a light for the Gentiles, to open eyes that are blind, to free captives from prison, and to release from the dungeon those who sit in darkness. So I think that's my job, too. And I think it's your job also to help with these type of issues. Well, yes. Yes, thank you. 'Thank you. It's a good piece of news, isn't it? Where was that? First Corinthians what?
2 Corinthians chapter 2, chapter 1, verse 3 through 7.
2 Corinthians 1, 3 through 7, if you didn't hear everything Tyrone said. Thank you. Well, so what I'm suggesting then is that our thinking isn't naturally 100% accurate. And what we know about ourselves is when we can't trust our thinking, it naturally sets up a fear in us. And so how do you overcome that unless you can trust your thinking? What we can do is learn how to trust the one who's in charge of our thinking, and that works better. Like my wife, Lindy, I'm married to her for a long time. And we just had an anniversary. And the truth is that Lindy is not too sure that she can trust my thinking. Yeah. Well, so what is she going to do? Is she going to stay scared all the time about this weird guy who goes off and thinks weird thoughts and does funny things? No, what she can do is she might not be able to trust me 100%, and that's really true, she can't, because I'm not 100% trustworthy. But what I think she can do is trust God in me. I am a Jesus follower. I am a disciple of Jesus. And I really want to be like Jesus. And I really want God to be proud of me. She can trust that because God's in me. So now she knows, okay, I'm married to this strange fellow. And he's going to twist off and do strange things. But he won't go very far and he won't stay gone very long, because he'll come right back to doing what he was doing, which is walking the straight path. That's what I want to do. And that's what Lindy can trust in me. And that's what people can trust in disciples of Jesus. We might get twisted off, but we don't stay there. We just come on back. And that then makes a trustworthy life. And it makes something that somebody can trust in. So what I'm suggesting is that the thing that heals the most, the people who come to us for help, are the same things that help a marriage work and the same things that make a business work and the same things that make everything work. It's trustworthiness and dependability and loving them and liking them and doing the things that we're called to do as disciples of Christ. And that takes the suffering away from whatever circumstances, or it helps take the suffering from whatever circumstances that we're in. And we don't have to have clinical mental illness in order to benefit from that. Listen to this. Elisha, y'all know about him? Strange fellow. Worried about his hairdo. Isn't that funny? I mean, it wasn't funny, those guys who made fun of him. The bear killed him. But listen to this. The king of Aram got mad at Elisha because he was at war with Israel. And he said, now I'm going to set up my camp in such and such a place. This is 2 Kings 6. So the Elisha, they call him the man of God here, sent word to the king of Israel, beware of passing that place because the Arameans are going down there. So the king of Israel checked on the place indicated by man of God. And time and again, Elisha warned the king so that he was on his guard in such places, which really made the king of Aram mad, and he thought somebody in his own camp was ratting him out. And so he summoned his officers and demanded of them, will you not tell me which of us is on the side of the king of Israel? He said, well, none of us, what they told him. But Elisha, the prophet who's in Israel, tells the king of Israel the very words you speak in your bedroom. Well, he said, well, go find where he is so I can send men to capture him. So they heard that he was in Dothan. There's a town in Alabama named Dothan, but it's not this one. The report came back, he's in Dothan. Then he sent horses and chariots and a strong force there, and they went by night and surrounded the city. Elisha had a servant with him. And this guy got up early, and listen to this next sentence. When the servant of the man of God got up and went out early the next morning, an army with horses and chariots had surrounded the city. Oh, my Lord, what shall we do? The servant asked. What do you think his emotional state was at that point? He was suffering from the exact same stuff that we do when our thinking is messed up. He was scared, I'm sure. Maybe terrified. If you're surrounded, like, and the odds are something like 40,000 to 2, it's not good odds. It worries you. And so, same thing with him. You know what his only problem was, though? The servant had only one problem that would fix his whole deal. What was it? Faith in God. And then specifically, he needed one thing to fix him in this particular story. He just needed to see better. Listen to this. Fascinating story. Elisha said, don't be afraid. Does that sound familiar? Didn't Jesus say that a lot? Elisha said, don't be afraid. Those who are with us are more than those who are with them. Right, Miss Mary? And Elisha prayed, Lord, open his eyes so he may see. Then the Lord opened the servant's eyes, and he looked and saw the hills full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. Fixed him right there. He could see better. Do you think that the horses and chariots showed up just right before that servant saw them? I'm convinced that they were already there and had been there. He just couldn't see them. But probably in every other respect, this servant of Elisha was a normal guy. He probably wasn't too compromised in his brain. His thinking was probably fairly straight. But in this case, it looked like he was going to get destroyed, but he was thinking wrong and he didn't know the truth. Now, the truth is that I don't remember ever seeing horses and chariots of fire around me. And so I don't know how to open somebody else's eyes to actually see those. But from this study that I've done this quarter, I've learned some truth that I see better, and I can help another person see by the things that I tell them. In this case, they had an utter complete victory that turned from what appeared to be complete failure and complete extermination. And all it was a situation where the guy needed to see better. Well, usually things are not that dramatic in my life. Never are they that dramatic in my life. But what I do see is in my own self and in those around me, I see the fears and the dismay and the worry and the anxiety that come from believing things that I just know are not true. And so what do people need from me? We hired a guy the other day. He came in for an interview. One of the sharpest guys I've ever seen. Really smart. Computers and things like that. We noticed that he was sweating real badly during the interview. Thought, what's wrong with this guy? I mean, why is he so nervous about this interview? And ended up hiring him, did a magnificent job, really helpful, really smart. If he didn't know something, he'd figure it out. The other day, he told one of his buddies, he said, you know what, when I came in to interview, where he interviewed at was an inpatient psychiatric hospital. When I came in to interview, I thought my wife was committing me to this hospital. He said, I thought that she had conspired this concocted story about me going for an interview when really what she was wanting to do was just to get me in there. And I had concluded that you can get me, but I'm not going without a fight because I'm going to, I can. But he thought all she needed was to get him behind a locked door and then that would be enough. I thought, what in the world? Where did that come from? He said, well, I had been in bed for the last 2 weeks because I don't have a job and I just didn't have any energy to get up. I mean, and talking to the guy and looking at him and saying, Visiting with him, never in 100 years would you think that guy is fighting that kind of problem. Never. But he was so depressed from what he considered to be a chain of failures that he just knew his wife picked up on that and was going to commit him. Well, he's blossomed since he was there, and he's really, really kind of on fire and doing great. But who knew? Who would have thought? Well, what that tells me is that it's extremely important that I be nice to everybody I'm talking to, and that I say a good word of encouragement to everybody I'm around, and that I try to build up those I'm around, because it's absolutely impossible for me to look in somebody's face and really tell everything they're dealing with. And so if I'm nice to somebody who doesn't need it, well, it doesn't cost me very much. It's okay. But what if I'm nice to somebody who desperately needs it? Still doesn't cost me very much, but it's incredibly powerful to the person receiving it. So then I get to be like Jesus. I don't break bruised reeds, and I don't snuff out smoldering wicks. And I can live my life in a way that I think I'm called to live it. And we can do it when we learn these skills about how not to keep fear from scaring ourselves to death. If we can get that, then we can pass it on to other people. I wanted to read you a little story. It's a fiction story, but it has a little something to do with what we're talking about here. It's actually, the story is fiction, but the details have been lived out in a lot of different ways. Well, I think that story left this book. Somehow or another, somebody cut it out. Okay, let's try this one. It's the same story. I just found it. It's called Singing in the Dark. Tommy jumped and landed upright in bed, throwing the covers clear and looking wildly around. Printed blue pajamas covered his racing heart, and terror made him pant like a sprinter. A bear had been chasing him and had finally run him over a cliff, but instead of crashing to the rocks below, he had landed in his bedroom on his own bed with no bear in sight. Not sure whether it had been a dream, the child sat still as a statue, listening hard into the night for the slightest sound. Stars, brilliant in the darkness, let a soft glow into the bedroom, and the open window filtered the muted tones of a countryside springtime night. The sound of each rustling leaf and singing cricket magnified the boy's fear. His imagination peopled the backyard with horrible monsters that had dripping fangs and appetites that craved little children. A stirring of the leaves in the apple tree beside his window startled the youngster and filled him with dismay. Maybe the bear had somehow gotten up in the tree and was even now looking at him, planning its death-dealing leap to the windowsill. Wanting desperately to flee, but frozen to his bed, the lad shut his eyes, forcing tears down his cheeks. He sat quietly in the dark, a helpless little figure with no hope of rescue. Everyone else was asleep far away down the hall and could never get there in time, so he had to face the beast alone. Well, the rustling in the tree grew more insistent, and the boy braced himself. Then the bear chirped. It was a soft little sound that didn't quite measure up to what a bear should be saying. Puzzled but still afraid, the child remained still. The chirp repeated. Then, to the lad's great amazement, the bear broke into song. a beautiful, lilting tune that seemed to transport the night into another place. It spoke of dandelions in the grass, sunshine, dusty bare feet, and butterflies on the roses. It didn't sound bear-like at all. Immediately, the boy knew what it was. Tommy eased out of bed and crept slowly to the window. And straining his eyes in the starlight, he could just barely make out the shape against the skyline. Sure enough, not 5 feet from his window perched a mockingbird. 6 ounces of pure music wrapped up in a bunch of feathers, singing its heart out in the face of all the creatures of darkness. Surrounded by the night, not knowing and not caring who was listening, it sang one stanza after another with reckless abandon. On and on the songster trilled as the monsters cringed and slunk away in shame at its glory. Its music transformed the gloom into a soft, warm cloak that welcomed the boy into its protective folds. Oh, mesmerized by the moment, the child forgot about bears. His heart settled back in his chest, the tears dried, and he grinned. If a little old bird wasn't afraid, then he sure wasn't going to be scared. He was asleep in moments. Well, Tommy grew up, but he never forgot the bird. He learned that people everywhere are scared and lonely just as he was that evening. And they need to hear some notes of joy in the gloomy places of their hearts where monsters dwell and the nights get scary. People need to hear the reckless abandon of a free heart singing at the top of its lungs into the faces of all the beasts of despair. So now, wherever he goes, Tommy, the grown-up boy, makes sure that he does this one thing. He sings in the dark. Well, what do you think? We can do the same thing. See, it's our job to bind up the wounds of the brokenhearted. And when we find relief for ourselves by learning these truths, we become aware that nearly everybody else around us needs the same thing. And we find ourselves in a position of not breaking bruised reeds and not snuffing out smoldering wicks and binding up the wounds of hurting people and setting captives free, making straight paths for our feet and singing in the dark. And we become the aroma of Christ everywhere about us, the fragrance of the goodness of God. We become, if you will, God made visible to unbelieving people until they can come to believe in an invisible God. And I think, guys, that I believe that's our noble calling as children of God and as Christ followers. Thanks for listening. Y'all listening really well. Tyrone? No, sir. We're out of time.
This brother is not going to tell you this is his book. And many of you have it, and many of you do not have it. But I have it. And it has 27 stories, just like the one that Nathan just told you. And this good brother has let Tyrone use this as a fundraiser for his mission trip. And so the book is not for sale, but for a $20 donation. This book, it helped me, it helps Nathan, it helped anybody, graduates or anyone. So Nathan, thank you for the book and for the help. I said it.
You make me real uncomfortable, Tyrone. Hey. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for letting us be here. Thank you for your goodness to us. And thank you for teaching us these things that help our lives and that make a big difference to those following behind. We're most grateful that we can meet as a group of your people And we're especially grateful to you for Jesus, who makes all this possible for us and gives us hope and gives us the joyful abilities that we have here. We'd ask you to dismiss us in your care and be with each one of us today. And it's through Christ we pray. Amen.